Welcome to the 20% True Podcast, Season 5, Monster of the Week, Episode 11, Cassandra. I'm Carolyn Rahaman. Shake, shake, shake. Cassie's kid says a lot of weird stuff. A lot of non sequiturs, a lot of repeating, a lot of sudden shrieking. But there's something about the timbre of her voice now. Something about the pauses before and after her statement. Something about the flavor of the air as she makes this proclamation. Because that's what it's like, a proclamation. Her kid was playing by herself with a combination of blocks and plastic ponies. And Cassie was taking advantage of her daughter's distraction to clear off the counter in the kitchen. "What's shaking?" Cassie asks, part silly, part encouraging her daughter to hold a back-and-forth conversation. "It's something they're working on." Her daughter looks up at her and blinks, confused to have her play interrupted. "Was something shaking?" Cassie asks. "Hilda is going to the grocery store," her daughter says, like that's an answer. Hilda is one of the more mischievous ponies. And Cassie is familiar with the high pitch of Hilda's voice as her daughter speaks for her. Hilda was not the one who mentioned 458. But her daughter is acting like this makes sense, like there's some logic connecting shake, shake, shake in the grocery store. So Cassie nods and goes back to moving spices from the counter back to the spice rack. And her kid goes back to her black pony grocery store epic. Cassie doesn't give it another thought until bedtime, when her kid is brushing her teeth for 2 minutes, and Cassie is checking the news on her phone. 2 minutes seems a reasonable amount of time to devote to both of these activities. More nonsense from the city, more nonsense from some other state, more nonsense at the national level. Globally, there's news coming in about an earthquake. The estimated loss of life ticks up as she watches. The earthquake hit at 4:58. She stares at her phone, her scrolling paused. She dumps when the 2-minute timer goes off, her phone vibrating in her hand. She takes her daughter's toothbrush and rinses it, handing the kid a cup of water. She doesn't spit in the sink. It's something they're working on. "Do you remember when Hilda was going to the grocery store this morning?" Cassie asks. "They got pocky," her daughter says. Cassie didn't get pocky at the store the last time they went, because she got Klondike bars instead. Her daughter will apparently never forgive her for this decision. "How fun," Cassie says. "Hey, do you remember when you said 4:58, shake, shake, shake?" Her daughter thinks, her little forehead wrinkling up. Then she says, "No." "Oh," Cassie says. They read Hooray for Bear, and Cassie tries and fails to convince her daughter to sleep with a soft stuffed animal friend instead of her husband's Funko Pop of Dr. Malcolm from Jurassic Park. Cassie sings Blackbird, like every night, and kisses her kid's forehead, and turns off the fairy lights over the bed. Her kid snuggles in with Dr. Malcolm, with no idea how weird that is. Cassie eats a Klondike bar in front of the TV, and mostly forgets about the earthquake. But she does have a general feeling of unease that she attributes to her husband's trip to New Zealand, and how when he's not here, the house makes new, strange noises. There's another proclamation the next day. They're at the park, and her daughter is on a loop, climbing up the rope ladder, crossing the suspension bridge that she obviously hates, and then going down the slide. Climbing up the rope ladder, crossing the suspension bridge that she still hates, and then going down the slide. Climbing up the ladder, and on and on. When she starts to slow down, Cassie will lure her home with promises of screen time. Her daughter stops at the top of the slide, stares up at the sky as if she's seen an airplane, then looks Cassie dead in the eye. There's a tree on fire. Cassie startles. What? Where? She turns around, covering her eyes against the glare, looking for a burning tree. Her daughter laughs and slides down the slide. She runs over to climb up the rope ladder. Did you say you saw a tree on fire? No. Yes, you did. You said there was a tree on fire. Why did you say that? Her kid shrugs, then set her attention on crossing the suspension bridge, gripping the railing on one side with both hands, scooting like a crab across the bridge, pausing with every shift of her weight, every sway of the ground beneath her pink sneakers. There's a forest fire that afternoon, a great burning across Southern California, where neighborhoods look completely normal, except for the darkening sky. They look completely normal until one of the houses on a quiet suburban street is on fire. It pulls Cassie off her regular news page, onto pages of stories dedicated to the fire. She scrolls through picture after picture of helicopters dropping water on burning trees. Mama? 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 She snaps up with a gasp and a what? Her daughter points at her phone, which is buzzing in her hand. The 2-minute timer is long over. Cassie hadn't noticed. Her daughter thrusts her toothbrush at Cassie, and she takes it as if it were a grenade. How did her daughter know? It's harder to shake it off tonight, and instead of watching TV, Cassie gets at her computer and reads about the wildfire until she falls asleep on the sofa. She starts keeping a record of her daughter's proclamations on a sheet of preschool handwriting paper with a dashed line through the center so her daughter can practice not squishing the whole lowercase b onto the lower half of the line. So far, she's shown no improvement. They're working on it. While they work on it, with her daughter copying down the names of random products from the latest Costco magazine, Cassie borrows a page and writes down the first two proclamations, along with the next couple that have popped up over the last few days. They all send a shiver against the vertebrae right under her shoulder blades. So far, her daughter has not only predicted natural disasters, but also a teacher's strike with, "The teachers won't go to school. They won't go to school for 4 days." She announced, "He went on vacation in the mountains, in the snow, but he didn't bring his family, and now he's not allowed to talk about icebergs." Which obviously predicted the political sex scandal that derailed the narrative about climate change. She announced, "She's going to sing all the words to the song, and no one will like it." And Cassie's not 100% on this one, but she thinks it's about some high-profile nonsense racism. Hard to tell. She writes these down, taking up only half the height of each line so she can fit much more on the page. She's an adult with mature motor skills and decent handwriting. She's allowed to do that. But she's doing exactly what she told her daughter not to do, and when she looks up, her daughter is cramming her letters together as well. Cassie says, "Oh, no, no! Make the big down line reach from the blue line to the blue line. Make them real big!" Her daughter blinks up at her with a frown and big owl eyes and says, "The phone business won't be around for long." Cassie blinks back at her. Then she sighs and writes that down with the rest. "It doesn't mean anything," her husband says over Skype that night. New Zealand is 18 hours ahead, so they set up the computer to talk to him while he has lunch and they have dinner. Cassie's daughter has gotten bored and wandered away, so Cassie took the opportunity to tell him about their daughter's creepy predictive powers. "Kids just say weird things. It's just synapses firing at random when she makes connections." "Yeah, but," she says, "then things are happening. They match up." She reaches for a list and reads a few to him, but he just shakes his head. "She says a million weird things every day, and a million weird things happen every day. At least one weird thing out in the world is going to be the same subject as something she says, especially if you're trying to make them fit together." He unconsciously slips into his professor voice. "You're making connections that aren't there, looking for patterns, The world is weird and humans find it helpful if they think they have control. Yeah, I know, she says. But they are really weird coincidences. Not really, he says. It's like Nostradamus. He said things that were so vague that anything that happens could be one of his prophecies. These aren't vague, though, she says. Yesterday, she said there were no more falcons. And guess what? Today, there are no more falcons. The last Canadian red falcon was shot. She knows falcons are endangered, he argues. It says that in her book about birds. It's not like she specified the last Canadian red falcon would be shot. There are so many news stories. I thought you were only trying to read the news for 2 minutes a day. Yeah, but you're making too much of this, he says. I know you're stressed, and I'm sorry about that. But our kid really can't see the future. Cassie is unconvinced, but doesn't want to argue with him. Shortly after, they say their goodbyes. Her daughter reappears at her hip as she washes dishes. What's up, sweetie? Are you about ready for a bath? Babies come out of a can, she announces. Then she wanders off again. Cassie finishes up dishes with a really bad feeling in her gut. If someone puts a baby in a can, she's going to lose it. No one put a baby in a can. No, there's just some representative who thinks babies can be grown in cans with science. And therefore, women shouldn't have rights? Cassie doesn't really follow the logic there. She's too relieved that no one opened a can and found a surprise newborn to be all that upset about the situation. After that, she's simply convinced that her kid can see the future. Thankfully, it doesn't seem like she really understands any of it. She's not afraid of school shootings, and she doesn't understand the horrors of war or imprisonment or families being ripped apart. She doesn't get that the things she sees are fueled at their core by hate. So Cassie's concern wanes. She comes to a level of acceptance when her daughter announces at the grocery store that pork's not safe to eat because no one's checking for germs. You don't need powers of prophecy to know that, she says without pause, lifting a packet of chicken thighs to see if the one underneath it is better. But then she stills and realizes that everything her daughter has said, she's known herself on some level. People are awful and disasters happen. She couldn't have been specific about it, but her daughter, with all her supernatural powers, wasn't specific either. Something's going to be unsafe. Someone is going to get in trouble. Someone is going to cause violence. She knows these things will happen. She just doesn't know the specifics. And the specifics are the frightening part. Her daughter predicts these things, but even with the predictions, it's not enough to do anything about them. It's not enough to put a stop to anything. There's nothing they can do. She blinks at the chicken in her hands and says out loud, "Yes, there is." "What, Mama?" Cassie turns. Her daughter no longer looks like an owl sitting in the shopping cart, meaning she's back to herself. Cassie smiles. "What do you say we do some volunteering this weekend? You and me. We can go to a soup kitchen, or to the food depository and sort food for hungry people. Or we could plant a tree or something. We could help people. Would you like that?" Cassie's daughter is a weirdo and doesn't know what's happening, so of course she shouts, "Yeah!" "Okay," Cassie says. They can't prevent the future her daughter sees. They're working on it. The 20% True podcast is written and produced by me, Carolyn Rahman. Music was composed by Kimiku. If you like the show, please be sure to rate and review on Apple Podcasts so other people can discover it. Follow the show on Facebook at facebook.com/20percenttrue. Visit my website, 20percenttrue.blogspot.com, for updates, thoughts on writing, and book reviews. And follow me on Twitter at CarrieInTheHits.